accept your fate, co-hosts? Okay. Are we ready? Okay.
Yes.
Here we are.
When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea, there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Ann Harding.
And I'm your host, Isabel Hauser.
I am your host, Simon Brooks, and we have some stories for you.
This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely.
Hello, hello, Story Podcast hosts!
Hello!
Hello, hello.
Hi, hi, hi!
So we hosts thought you might enjoy hearing a few stories from us. We are still on hiatus, but the first story for this episode is by Simon Brooks. Simon, before you start us off with your story, what are you up to this summer?
Well, I don't know if you can see much of me, but I've just this second finished telling stories at a summer camp. There were two groups. One of them a little bit earlier this morning, the other one just finished, and there's going to be a lot of that this summer. I'm also turning really old in a few weeks. I'm going to be 60.
Woo!
I don't know about that, but anyway, we'll see how it goes. So the story that I'm going to tell you today is about this woman who had this clock. Now, of course, this story happened long, long, long ago. And it was said that the woman was given the clock a long, 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 long time ago. In fact, it was so long ago, nobody remembered who gave her the clock. In fact, nobody really remembered how long the woman had been living in this town. But people go and visit because they wanted to see the clock. It was absolutely stunning. It was made of wood. It hung from a wall, but it was inlaid with gold and silver. And then there was a plaque on which it was attached. And this had these engravings on them, these flowers and plants, these faces. It was the most wonderful clock that anybody had ever seen. And of course, like I said, people wanted to see it. Now, this woman, she'd been around a long, long time, and she hated gossip. Gossip is just not good for anyone. And everybody, it seemed, in her town liked to gossip. They're always talking about other people. Some of it was true, maybe a lot of it wasn't. And so she decided, as she was getting on in years, that she would offer up her clock as a prize for competition. The person that did not gossip the longest would win the clock. When it was announced, people were thrilled. People had no idea that this was ever going to happen. They just thought the clock would vanish at some point. But now somebody in the village will be able to take the clock? What an honor. And so people stopped gossiping. Well, some people stopped gossiping for a day or two, and then they were back at it. And as time passed, fewer and fewer people in the village were not gossiping. They were back at it again. Until the old woman, she thought, well, everyone's gossiping. But then this boy showed up at a door. When she opened it, she knew the lad. She said, I haven't gossiped this whole time as everybody else is now gossiping. I think I've won the clock. And she just looked at him and she knew him. I wouldn't say that he was dull, but he wasn't very interested in anything. Himself, even. He just did what he had to do. So she didn't doubt that he never gossiped, because nobody would share anything with him anyway. So she went off to get the clock that was still hanging on her wall. You know, someone else came in for this clock. Well, really? Says the young man. Yes, she said. Well, who was it? Well, mind your own business, she said. So she put the clock back on the wall and lived for the rest of her life with it there. The end.
So good.
I didn't expect
people
that.
People can't mind their own business, can they?
So the fairy tale sponsor for this episode is Northwind Shorts. You have heard of 7 mile boots and cloaks of invisibility. Now enjoy Northwind Shorts.
These shorts will keep your legs very, very cool all summer. While your friends sweat in summer styles, you will have the Northwind cooling breezes to keep everything fresh.
We have all different kinds, from cut-off shorts to dad shorts, capris, which some folks would say don't count, but we say, be cool, man. Northwind Shorts, the freshest of fashions.
The second story for this episode is by the host, Rachel Ann Harding. Before you start us off with your story, Rachel Ann, tell us, what are you doing this summer?
I don't think this is being a podcast. You can't really see what's going on, but I'm holding my 10-month-old Quentin in my arms because he's hanging out with us for this episode. And as you know, last time when we spoke, I was looking around for a fairy godmother and we had an application sent in. I know, I'm very excited. I'm like, we've been looking through different applications, but this one was sent specifically to the podcast. And this one, I'll just read you the letter because I think it's fantastic. It says, my name is Lucilia Grace Godmother. I graduated from the Wilbury School of Fairy Godmothering and Magical Arts with honors. I have 272 years of fairy godmother experiences. My first ever fairy godmother job was for a king and a queen who were having a blessing for their newborn daughter named Aurora, or as she's better known now, Sleeping Beauty. After my first fairy godmother job, I took a break and started working at Fairy Babysitting Inc., run by Cinderella's fairy godmother. Then when I had worked for FB Inc. for about 2 years, I left to return to fairy godmothering. I now work for Wilbury School Fairy Godmother Association, or WSFGA, full-time. I noticed that you do not want any of the old silly blessings, and I'm pleased to assure you that WSFGA switched to a new method of blessing after 1938. Now we let parents choose the blessings they want, and we deliver them. Thank you for your time reading this email. Luck and happiness, Lucilia G. Godmother, Wilbury School Fairy Godmother Association. We really like this application, because she seems to be open to us choosing the blessings for Quentin. He already has the blessing of squirreliness. He has the blessing of being cute and chubby. So we're thinking maybe something like woodworking or something outdoorsy, because we like doing outdoor stuff. But we look forward to following up with Miss G Godmother.
Lovely. I am really curious to hear how that's going to turn out and who the fairy godmother ends up being for your tiny little squeaky baby. And now, what story are you going to tell us today?
The story I'm going to tell you today is actually one of my own creation, but it's a fairy tale. Long ago, Jenny and Seamus were blessed with a bonny baby boy. He was sweet and round and roly-poly. He was the joy of their hearts. And one afternoon, Jenny went to put him in the cradle, and he started to scream, cry like a raven. And so she held him in her arms, and he settled. And like any mother, she just assumed her child had changed. And from that point on, the child slept in her arms. Now, a few days later, it was time to start feeding him solids. And that baby refused everything she offered, the finest cheese, the sweetest milk, the bits of bread. No, all he wanted to do was nurse. Oh, maybe she had a picky eater on her hands. And so she didn't press him. She simply nursed. His teeth started to come through, and he cried with his sore gums, and Seamus rubbed a bit of fine whiskey on the gums to numb them. Oh, the baby really seemed to like that. His eyes got big and curious, and he reached for the bottle with those tiny chubby hands, and Seamus laughed. Oh, this child will be an excellent Irishman. He's got good taste. Well, it wasn't until Jenny was holding the baby in her arms one afternoon. The baby had fallen asleep, and she bent to kiss his head, and her heart skipped a beat. She saw that the cowlick on the top of his head ran counterclockwise, and she clearly remembered when she had pushed that little child into the world, the midwife, after cleaning him up, had said, "Oh, he's got a sunwise cowlick. He will be lucky." But now Jenny saw that it ran Widdershins, and it all came back to her. The child that would not sleep in the bed with iron nails, the child that would not eat food from the mortals, the child that loved whiskey, she held in her arms a changeling. And she looked at the child, and it sighed in its sleep. And just instinctually, she bent and she kissed its little head. That evening, as Jenny and Seamus sat by the fire, Jenny asked Seamus, "Did your mothers ever tell you stories of changeling children?" "Oh, yes. They would tell me stories. My mother, my grandmother, even my great-grandmother had stories." "Well, what would they do when they realized that the child was a changeling?" "Well," said Seamus, "one of the stories my mother told me, you take a red-hot poker and you try to poke the child and it would run away and your child would be left in its place." "Oh, that's awful," said Jenny. "Who would do that to a child? What else?" "Well, my grandmother told me stories that if you took the child and you threw it over the edge of a bridge, the child would float back to fairyland and maybe yours would be returned." "That's even worse," said Jenny. "No one would do that to a babe. Now, any other stories?" "Well, my great-grandmother, she told me a story that if you took the changeling child to the yew grove on the summer solstice, the fairy world would open up and you would walk through the halls of fairy, and the child would change in your arms. But if you could hold on to the child until you came to the queen of the fairies, then you'd have a chance to get your own back." Seamus sat quietly for a moment, and then he said, "Tomorrow is the solstice, and his cowlick runs Widdershins. But for the life of me, when he holds those tiny chubby arms up to me, I can't help but scoop him up into my arms. I'll put some things in your apron pocket for you to take with you." The next morning, as the sun slowly began to rise, Seamus put a few things in Jenny's apron pockets, and she bundled up the child, and she walked to the yew grove, and the fairy world opened in front of her. She walked into the hall of honey. Honey dripped from honeycomb on the walls, and the child turned into a bee. And she cupped her hands around that little bee, even as the honey threatened to smother her. And she sang songs to that little bee about flowers and sunshine. And the honey receded, and she was not harmed, and she walked through. And then she walked into the hall of water, and the water rose around her, threatening to drown her. The child turned into a silver fish and tried to swim away, but from her pocket she took a net, and she caught that silver fish, and she held it close, and she whispered dreams of wishes to it, and she went through the hall of water unharmed. She came to the hall of fire. The flames licked up around her. It threatened to burn her, and the child turned into a flame. And from her pocket, she took a candle, and she caught that little flame on the end of it, and she cupped her hand round it so the wind could not blow it out, and she whispered stories of darkness that it could illuminate, and they walked through the hall of flame, and she was not burned. And she came to the hall where the queen of fairies stood. And the queen of fairies looked at Jenny with a bonny, plump child in her arms and said, "Those halls were meant to keep mortals out." And Jenny said, "Well, I came to get my child." And right beside the queen, there was a willow cradle where a very familiar child lay. But the queen looked at the one in Jenny's arms and said, "Has that child slept in a bed of iron?" "No," said Jenny, "he's only slept in my arms." "Has that child eaten of your food?" "No," said Jenny, "he's only nursed at my breast." "Has that child called you mother or your husband father?" "He's not old enough to talk." And when she said that, the child was gone from her arms. There was a second cradle of willow. There was that baby lying in it, those two babies that looked so much alike. And the fairy queen gestured towards the cradles and said, if you can choose and find your own, you can take him home. And Jenny walked to the cradles and she looked at both the babes and she kissed the tops of their heads. And she looked at the queen and she said, my child smells like milk and cries like a raven. My child sleeps in a bed with iron nails and in my arms. And she picked up both babies in her arms and she said, I didn't come to leave one child with you. They're both my sons. And from her pocket, she took bread covered in butter and she put it in both of their mouths and turned and walked out. She walked through the hall of fire. It did not burn her. She walked through the hall of water. It did not drown her. She walked through the hall of honey and it did not smother her. She walked into the grove of yew trees, and there was Seamus, and in her arms she held two plump boys with butter on their mouths who had left a trail of breadcrumbs all the way through Fairy World. Now, Seamus and Jenny had two boys, and it said they looked exactly alike, and they never quarreled, which is untrue, because children always quarrel, but they were the two twin sons of Seamus and Jenny.
That is so good. I love that story.
So wonderful. I love it.
I realized I couldn't really write that story until I had a baby of my own, because it's always been on my mind to write a changeling story where the child is claimed. And I hadn't seen anything like it in the fairy tale collections. So I made one up.
Yeah.
And then within 2 weeks, Janice Del Negro told one from Scotland, which also has of a changeling child being kept and cared for by their family.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
So, two wonderful, lovely stories about changelings.
Yes.
Are now in my repertoire.
So, you ready for the third story, people? The third story of this episode is by our host, Isabel Hauser. Before you start telling us your story, Isabel, what amazing thing are you going to be doing with your son?
Well, since we're on the theme of Ireland, Anne told a story that's set in Ireland, I'm going to tell an Irish folktale because I am going to go to Ireland for 3 weeks. I am so excited. I am going to, one of those 3 weeks will be a storytelling holiday that I'm going to lead on the magical island of Inishmore. And just today, I have created magical envelopes for the participants to put their handouts in. I put actual four-leaf clovers on them with gold glitter around. And you know, as magical things happen in Ireland, I would not be surprised if one day they open their envelopes and maybe the words on the pages are all jumbled, making up different messages, or maybe they'll find messages of a different kind altogether. So I am preparing for a summer of whimsy and enchantment, and I cannot wait to get on that winged unicorn and set off to the Emerald Isle. Can't come soon enough.
So what story are you going to share with us today?
I am going to tell you a folktale from Ireland. That story took place a long, long time ago in a remote village. There weren't a lot of people living there, but one of the inhabitants was an extraordinarily charming woman. Wherever she went, she turned everyone's head. And I mean, everyone. Some turned their heads with longing, others with jealousy, and others again with wonder. How could someone be so enchanting and not even be aware of it? And so you can imagine, she created quite a bit of havoc without wanting to. People bumping into each other into the streets because they were all looking where she was going. And after that had gone on for a while, the elders of the village, they'd had quite enough. They wanted peace restored. And so they demanded to see that woman. She skipped into the great hall of that village and they said, "We've had quite enough of your meddling." "Meddling? I'm not doing anything. I'm just living my life." "Well, you're meddling all the same. We want peace and quiet restored in our village. So the only solution is you have to take a husband. We have to get you back behind a stove to have peace and quiet." And she said, "Oh, well, but I wouldn't know who to marry because, you see, there is one man and he's awfully handsome. But whenever he opens his mouth, it's like boots on gravel. And then there's this other guy and his voice is like, oh, it's like butter and honey. But he's so clumsy. If he were to repair something in our house, I would not be surprised if he would manage to nail his own hand to the wall. And then there's this other man, and he's very clever with his hands, but let's just say he's not the brightest candle on the cake." And she was going to talk about another man, but the elders, they said, stop. "We have heard quite enough. We do not care who you choose to marry as long as you do choose someone. You have one turning of the moon, and then we want you back right here, and you tell us who your husband is going to be." And they sent her off. Well, the moon waned and waxed, and when the time was up, she skipped back into the great hall and said, "I have great news for you." And the elders were on the edge of their seat because they were quite curious themselves who that charming woman chose as her husband. And she said, "I have great news because I have found not only one husband, but two." And they said, "But two husbands? No. That is not possible. You have to settle on one of them. One husband." "Well, how am I going to do that?" "We do not care as long as you choose someone." Stressing the one. And then she thought for a moment and said, "All right. So here's what we're going to do. They both have to bring me a present. And whichever present I like best, that's the man that I'm going to marry." That was announced. And one of the men, one of the candidates, he was a salesman, a trader. He had traveled the world and his house was filled with precious, expensive, fancy things from the basement to the top of the attic. And he thought, well, this shouldn't be too hard. And so he strutted through his house and he saw beautiful paintings, but they were all of women. No, she wouldn't like that. He saw beautiful clothes, but then he thought, no, she would probably want to pick out her own clothes. And then he saw his jewelry box. And he opened the jewelry box, he poured out the jewelry, and there was a beautiful necklace, and it glimmered and sparkled as if it were made of the stars from heaven itself. "That's the present that I'm going to give her." And so he put that necklace into a beautiful lacquered box, and he went to the woman and gave her his gift. And when she opened the box, her mouth was agape. Never had she ever seen anything as beautiful. And as she was stunned and silent, he said, "Well, no need to wait for the second present now, is there? Because that is hard to top." But she said, No. I said you both have a chance to give me a present, and I will wait for that other man to bring me his gift." And that other man, he was a farmer. He had a small plot of land and a small house. It wasn't much, but it was all he needed to be happy. Almost all. What he was missing was a wife. A wife to share the joys and sorrows of life with. A wife to tell stories to, share stories with through winter. And he knew in his heart that she was the one for him. He felt that she was the spoon of honey to his porridge. But what could he give her? He looked around and, well, there were a few flowers, but there were flowers all over the village. There were pretty rocks, but there were rocks everywhere. He had nothing special that he could give her. And he was so overwhelmed with the sadness of this realization that he began to weep. He began to cry. Tears streamed down his cheeks, and he was ashamed. He didn't want anyone to see him like this. So he climbed up into the tree in front of his house and hid in the thick green foliage. And as he sat there, he wept, and he thought of her. He thought of her laugh when she walked through the village. He thought of her strong and kind hands when she helped other people. And he thought of the spark in her eye when they danced at the fair together. And he was so lost in his memories that he didn't even realize that he began to cut the leaves of the tree into a heart shape. He was so lost in his memories that he just cut out heart after heart after heart. Time passed. And the woman, she waited for him, and he did not turn up. And she thought, that is very unusual. He's a very reliant man. He's never let me down. Something must have happened. I will just walk towards him. And so she started walking the path to his house. She didn't see him anywhere. She called out for him. There was no answer. She walked and walked until she reached his farm. She didn't see him. She didn't hear anything. So she called out his name again. And then she heard a sniffle, like someone trying to collect themselves after they've cried a lot. And that sniffling seemed to be coming from the tree in front of his house, the tree whose leaves all had a heart shape. And she could not believe her eyes when he emerged from that tree, jumping onto the clippings of the leaves. And at that moment, she knew in her heart who the best husband for her was going to be. And it wasn't long until the wedding bells rang out. And the two of them lived on his small farm, happily ever after. And to this day, that tree, the linden tree, has leaves in the shape of a heart. And to this day, it reminds us of the power of true love. And that's the story.
Yay! Simon is muted.
Not anymore.
There we go! Yay! That was really lovely.
That was an amazing story. That was beautiful.
Thank you. That's called The Wonderful Present or The Wonderful Gift. It's a story from Amazon.
Where did you find it?
I think I found it in a book about trees, because it is a story about the linden tree and why it's got heart-shaped leaves.
That's really good. I love that.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
I think it's really fun. She's so sassy.
She's like skips back in, and then I'm going to have two. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show the love. find us online. Tell us you heard us on the podcast and want to hear us tell more stories. You can find Tellers from the Podcast, all of those back episodes, and discover what they can bring to your home.
Do you know that you can connect with me, Simon Brooks, pretending to be Quentin the Baby, at simonbrooksstoryteller.com,
which redirects to Diamond Scree, with Isabel at isabelhauser.com, that's Isabel, H-A-U-S-E-R.com, with Rachel Ann at rachelannharding.com. You can email us on the podcast at storystorypodcast@gmail.com. And the music is by Poddington Bear.
This podcast has been made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for supporting this podcast with your kindness and listening. There will be more stories down the road. And until then, live happily
ever
after.
Yeah.
Mary Kate opened up the door. And there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music from the royal court.
Oh my gosh. This has been a complicated episode to record with his wiggly needs. I am still thinking about how to make this happen and what a shortened version. So we could do shorter episodes. And then these longer ones would be like the special episodes. I know, it's dramatic and sad that I put you on the ground. Tell me your woes.
Well, I think he pooped, okay, when his butt was next to my head.
Well, he was sitting on my shoulders. There was a smell from his derriere.
This is going in the podcast. This is a beautiful podcast.